welcome to At the Movies, Like and Read, a show of two film professors talking about movies. I'm Mike Sander.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
Today we're going to talk about Patricia, Judi Dench, who's had a long, illustrious career, and like many of the people we've talked about on the show, started off with a stage show that is very illustrious. I don't know how much you want to emphasize her stage career, Mike. I will say she has said she's most comfortable on stage where there's an audience to tell a story to, as opposed to a film set where you're not in charge at all. Stage reaction. So she started her stage
I don't want to overstate this, but the Americans certainly oftentimes have really strong theater backgrounds. But there's something about that British classical tradition in terms of the drama school, in terms of Shakespeare, and so on. And she's of that generation. You mentioned Marissa Redgrave, a lot of other actors that we can mention in this respect. They typically have that kind of solid grounding. And to me, the fact that she was so comfortable doing stage work, she actually was known primarily as a stage actor for quite a while. I mean, her movie reputation comes, you know, as she gets, you know, from a young woman in the middle age and so on, but she's not one of these people who just go right into the movies or even quickly in. She's comfortable on stage. She likes that. What I take from that in terms of performance style, the Brit actors, as you know, they know the text. I mean, think about Laurence Olivier is like the consummate example of this. They know the text and it's Shakespeare and you don't mess around with Shakespeare's words, right? You know the text. You also, in terms of line readings, you know how, you learn how to space your words. It's not just intonation, it's the spacing and so on. You don't do a Marlon Brando mumble, you don't do anything like that. No, you're delivering the text, which in this case will be screenplays. She and what comes with that is not just that solid training, which is obvious, but the fact that there's a degree of self-confidence, of assurance. When you can go out on stage and face down an audience and get through a 3-hour Shakespeare play, a movie set, which is very different in terms of how films are made, but you have that confidence, which she would have. And so, I mean, I love calling her not so much Judi Dench as Dame Judi. I mean, she has that stature, she has that status, that confidence. Let me make a very quick example in terms of the film career. When you see her as M in the James Bond films, she doesn't need to shout. She doesn't have to have histrionics or even a lot of physical movement. She holds the camera eye, she holds the attention that way, and she may only have 2 or 3 sentences, and it might just be a cameo in the film even, right? But she establishes herself. Nobody, no enemy agent is gonna do her in, right? She'll survive all of that. Now, doubling back, so I think in terms of the stage career, those are what I call the essential groundwork. This is the background she comes from. She could have continued doing just that, and I think been very happy and very famous doing that. When she starts to make movies, and she starts making movies in the early 1960s, when they start to register, or at least register for me and for most American viewers, is when you get into the mid to late 1980s. She makes a number of films like Room with a View, one of the Merchant Ivory films, 84 Charing Cross Road, Handful of Dust, Henry V, which of course is, you know, Kenneth Branagh's Shakespeare film. Why do I mention those? They come one after another. They do very well critically and commercially, not just in the UK, but in US release. And I'd fill up our half-hour episode if I listed all the famous actors that she appears with in those films. She's head and shoulders with all of them, not just in terms of talent, but in terms of, you know, ultimately name recognition. So that's the period, I think, when she really breaks through with movie audiences on both sides of the pond. And from that point onward, she is such a reliable film actress and just so good in everything she does, that she can be kind of, when I say picky, I don't mean like doing very few films, but I mean, she can do the films she wants to do, sometimes a starring role, sometimes frankly, just a cameo, just, you know, it's a quick paycheck, if you will, but just, you know, it appear in something, but you have the sense that she's in the driver's seat. you really feel like she's doing what she wants to do. And not everything has to be a serious Oscar-worthy film. She does some stuff just to do it, just commercial stuff. But she's one of those reliable actors who always comes through.
You know, as far as Room with a View, that's actually the first movie I ever saw her in. Again, this was back in the day when, you know, HBO was kind of new. And I just remember watching it and just being really impressed with the movie. But she did not like being in that movie. She didn't like working with James Ivory. She didn't think that they clicked. But she did like working with Maggie Smith. And by the way, she and Maggie Smith are old friends. And, you know, practically twins, because they were born only 19 days apart in December of 1934. So, you know, they have a lot of things in common and they've done several projects together. In terms of her Shakespeare background, she has played virtually all of Shakespeare's leading ladies. And of course, that's my lead in to, I think, what is probably one of her best known movies, which is Shakespeare in Love, which if you haven't seen it, it came out in 98. Where the world's greatest ever playwright, William Shakespeare, is young, out of ideas and short of cash, but meets his ideal woman and is inspired to write one of his most famous plays. And that's directed by John Madden, who she would make several movies with, several really good movies with. And of course, this is where she won an Academy Award for Best Actress in a Supporting Role for her role as Queen Elizabeth, although she's only on screen for about 6 minutes in four scenes. I mean, talk about picking up a paycheck. But she dominates in terms of, you know, she's just so memorable in that role. But it's the second shortest performance to win a Best Actress in a Supporting Role Oscar. Anything you want to say about that particular movie, Mike, before
Absolutely.
We... Okay,
Absolutely.
Go for it.
Shakespeare in Love, which came out in 1998, it's a really enjoyable film. Honestly, I don't think it's necessarily a great film. It won 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Do I think it was the Best Picture? Well, no, but it's so much fun watching it. I think the reason for all those Oscars has as much to do with Miramax's marketing department as with the film itself. But her Oscar was certainly deserved. So I'm saying the one thing and then saying the other. Marie, you're absolutely right. When she won the Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress, she's only on screen a matter of minutes, and yet she nails it. She is Queen Elizabeth. I mean, we're back in Shakespearean England. She looks and acts the part. She's so regal. She's the absolutely best thing in the film. So I'm so happy she won the Academy Award for that. But what I want to do is put it in a context of she's at the point now where she has a kind of queenly stature. She's acting royalty at this point, and she's playing royals oftentimes. So let me backtrack just a little bit to put this in context. Go back to actually just the year before, 1997. That's a golden year for her in terms of what she can do and what she is doing. That same year, 1997, she appears in one of the James Bond films, Tomorrow Never Dies, you know, playing M. That's a nice paycheck, whatever it was. I mean, you know, and it, when I say it's an easy role, I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. It's just she delivers the goods, right? That's what M should be. So anyway, she's in the Bond film. That same year, she appears in a film called Mrs. Brown, which I happen to like a lot, actually. In that film, she plays Queen Victoria. Now, Queen Victoria was widowed at a relatively young age and then remained a widow for decades, you know, wearing the black weeds, as they would say, and mourning Prince Albert and all that. But this is a true story that in real life, Queen Victoria became close to one of her servants, you know, John Brown. And so she was known in a kind of joking way. You wouldn't joke before her in this way, but she was known sort of in an aside as Mrs. Brown. Because, you know, she would be on the grounds walking with a servant, but they really would be talking like two people who are friends, not like master and servant. So what's striking is, you know, here she is playing, you know, Queen Victoria 1 year, and that film was very well received critically and commercially. And just a year later, she's winning the Academy Award for playing Queen Elizabeth. So, you know, she certainly knows that territory. And the thing is, she does it extremely well. Now, in terms of the versatility, it's not just a matter that you can play M or you can play, you know, the Queen of England. But one of my favorite roles of hers actually is just a few years later, the film Iris in 2001. She plays the writer Iris Murdoch, and she receives an Academy Award nomination for that role. Very different character. I mean, Iris Murdoch was a really gifted writer, but she did not have an imperious, you know, royal personality. You know, she's more of an ordinary person, and the film's very much about her marriage and just, you know, in terms of health and just in terms of the marital relations there, you know, and the fact that as you watch that film, a lot of the scenes are deliberately mundane. I mean, it really is a husband and wife. And yeah, she's a famous writer, but they're sitting at the kitchen table. Do you want another cup of tea kind of conversations? And just how quiet and understated a lot of it is. And that's one reason why, much as I admire her as Queen Elizabeth and as Queen Victoria, when I think about her greatest performances, I think, you know, as Iris Murdoch, she really tamps down any sort of, you know, big speeches or anything. And the way it's written and the way she plays it, you really feel like it's that quiet domestic life that you're getting there. And all these films appear in the same, you know, 2 or 3 year period. This is a really golden age for her, I would say, as an actor.
You know, going back to Mrs. Brown, she has said that that was the movie that actually got her career jump started, that that's when she started being taken seriously and being given better roles. And just for people out there who, you know, bloom late, I think she was 60 when she made Mrs. Brown. So, you know, a whole career of doing solid work and being a well-respected stage actress, you know, and then at 60, your career finally takes off. You know, that's not usually how that goes. About that movie, though, Mrs. Brown, it is such a gem, but do not be put off by the way, that's directed by John Madden too. It's a phenomenal movie, but it's kind of marketed as, you know, this forbidden passion, you know, between a rugged Scotsman and the most powerful woman in the world. It's the marketing like that is, it's so wrong because that's not what this movie is about at all. It's actually rather refreshing. It's about friendship and loyalty and duty, and it never goes into the sexual realm, although people are, you know, gossiping about it all the time and, you know, wondering why this man is being given so many abilities to do what he wants and to tell other people what to do when he's not the king. And people think that the relationship is unseemly, but it's actually a joy to watch because they don't make movies like this where it's really just about friendship and how that can make a difference in a person's life, especially later in life, especially after you've lost a spouse. So it's much deeper than you would guess by, you know, the sort of trashy way it's marketed. And even the title, Mrs. Brown, kind of gives you this idea that, I mean, did they get married at some point? That's what you're wondering when you're watching the movie. Historically, you know, that isn't how it went, but it's a wonderful, wonderful movie. So highly recommend that if you haven't seen it. I would like to say that I think her genius is she is very versatile. She's done many, many different roles. But I always like when she comes back to what I think of her as, you know, Dame Judi Dench, where you feel like you could sit down with her and have a cup of tea and have a really wonderful conversation. And she does these roles that make me as a woman, you know, getting older. It's like glimpses of a life as an older woman that aren't completely depressing. There are women with agency, women with lives, women with interests, interesting women. And she's done many roles like that, such as Ladies in Lavender. And actually there's a documentary called Tea with the Dames, which I watched. I was at the Rehoboth Film Festival, and it wasn't part of the film festival, but I discovered that, you know, you could stream it from Amazon Prime. And I was with a group of older ladies, and we actually did sit around and drink tea and watch that movie. And if you haven't seen that, it's definitely worth looking up because it's Dame Judi Dench, it's Maggie Smith, it's Joan Plowright, and they're all sitting around talking about their careers. And it's fascinating because you get to feel like you're sitting there with them, you know, talking about these, you know, the things that they've been through in their careers. So very, very much of that feeling, you know, you and Judy sitting down with some tea, talking.
I've actually seen Tea with the Dames also. And my experience was I saw it at the Charles Theater in Baltimore. And I was one of the few men in the audience. You know, it was a chick flick, but for chicks over 60, let's put it that way. and I actually, no, I mean, I really felt like I was eavesdropping because there was an identification, that great group of established and, you know, middle-aged or upper middle-aged British actresses on screen. And it's a very casually shot film. They really are just sitting around talking and joking, and it's banter, if you will. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a great documentary, but it's a great document in some ways, just to have them at ease with each other talking. But it was funny because as I looked around the theater, I realized that, you know, these were women, and all joking aside on this, who really closely emotionally identified with them. And I think partly, Marie, you're absolutely right. It's just that, you know, these are actresses of a certain age, as they used to say, who are still working and who are still really, really vigorous. And not only that, but they're not somehow all gloom and doom. There's a lot of life ahead. You know, they can just, you know, dress up, go out with their friends, have a good old time, and they don't need men in a way, you know, and I'm trying to think how to phrase that, but I mean, they're comfortable with each other, right? There's something to be said for that. And this is the period in her career also when she'll make films that play off of that. She is a dame, she's a grand lady, but she has, I wouldn't quite say the common touch, but there's a kind of casual, almost earthy quality that can also be there on occasion. What are some of the films I'm talking about at the moment? Ladies in Lavender, where she appears with her friend, Maggie Smith, whom we've talked about. It's not a great film, but it's a real pleasure. They play sisters in that. It's a great, and it's a period piece, and it's a great pleasure just to watch them interacting. When you have a great actor like that, or actors, they're not even doing much, and the film itself isn't any great shakes, but you know what? That's fine. It's the pleasure of their company, and that's what that film's prefaced on. And it's almost like the documentary you mentioned, Maria, in that nothing much really happens or is said. You know, I mean, not, no great statements, but just the easygoing company. So a film like Ladies in Lavender kind of play, from 2004 kind of plays off of that. The film she made the year after that, Mrs. Henderson Presents, that's an enjoyable film. I wouldn't make great claims for it as, you know, a cinematic masterpiece, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we have enough masterpieces. It's enough sometimes just to have a bonbon, to have a confection, to have something enjoyable. And that one in Mrs. Henderson Presents, she's playing a woman of means who financially is quite secure, and decides to help rescue a theater, if you will. And the theater manager is played by Bob Hoskins. So a lot of it's just simply the character relationships as she, you know, the wealthy patron, interacts with the theater manager, and then the kinds of shows they put on, which are rather risque by the theatrical standards of that day. You know, the showgirls, you know, throwing their garters kind of stuff, and how the public is scandalized, and some people love to be scandalized, and some people are genuinely scandalized. And again, watching that film, I remember thinking, you know, this is really pleasant. And I wasn't saying that in a sort of backhanded compliment way. I just thought, this is a really pleasurable film. Again, not a cinematic masterpiece, but so what? You know, and so when I say she's coasting in roles like that, it sounds derogatory, but it's not meant that way. It's just that she has a certain persona, a certain image, and she can play with that. And if she sometimes kind of coasts through it, she's got great actors around her. It's an enjoyable premise for the storyline. You know, it's okay to watch a movie that just simply gives you pleasure. I mean, not everything has to be didactic or, you know, super serious or, you know, any of that stuff. And here I am kind of talking against myself, because usually I'm the pompous one. But it's okay just to relax that way with the film.
You know, speaking of the word dame, you know, I didn't know this and had to look it up, that, you know, that's what you, it's a title you get if you've been knighted. So all of the ladies that are in Tea with the Dames, you know, it's because they've all been knighted. These are all, you know, well-respected actors. But also it's almost a double entendre, because when you think of the word dame, you think of an older, elegant woman, and that does follow through. It's also a little salty at times in Tea with the Dames. At one point, the director, Roger Michel, can be heard off screen asking the four women to talk about getting old. And Judi Dench responds, F off, Roger. So, you know, she's got an edge to her because she's just so elegant. But, you know, she brings that to, of course, Tea with Mussolini, another movie with tea in it. By the way, you never see the women actually drink tea in Tea with the Dames. But she milks that persona, I think, to great effect in Best Exotic Marigold Hotel from 2011, a movie that I really enjoyed because I love ensemble pieces, and it's got so many great actors in it. It's got, you know, Tom Wilkinson and Penelope Wilton and Bill Nighy. And so it's just a pleasure to watch them all, you know, play off of each other. And that movie, if you haven't seen it, is about British retirees who travel to India to take up residence in what they believe is a newly restored hotel. It's considerably less luxurious than advertised, but it's an ensemble piece. So you follow several different threads of characters, and it's a wonderfully satisfying film. Incidentally, Judi Dench's voiceover at the end, where she says, someone once said, everything will be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, then trust me, it's not yet the end. This is actually something from a Shah Rukh Khan movie. In his movie, Om Shanti Om, he says, life is like a film. It always has a happy ending. And if it's not happy, then it's not the end. So her voiceover is a paraphrase of that quote. How did you like Marigold Hotel and the sequel?
Not as much as you did. We're colleagues and we like each other. We don't always like the same films. To me, even though I said it's okay to coast like that sometimes, my feeling was in Marigold, the whole film was kind of coasting. I just felt like in some ways it was an easy, maybe too easy groove that it had gotten to. So I liked it. Well, I'll put it this way. I liked it well enough. So I was not anticipating or particularly looking forward to a sequel, if you will. And even though I've been saying all this high praise for Judi Dench and that she's great, whether in a starring role or a supporting one, whatever, I think there are times, and this is a bit of a career concern, where I think in the last 10 to 15 years, she's occasionally taken roles where it somehow is just like maybe a little too easy, coasting in that sense. So now I'll use it in a more pejorative sense. I'll italicize it as I use it now, perhaps in that sense, or even just simply on screen so briefly that, you know, you can get away with that in Shakespeare in Love. I mean, it's a great performance, deserves the Academy Award, but sometimes in the last decade or so, it just seems like she'll pop up. Like, for instance, in 2011, she appears in one of the Pirates of the Caribbean series on Stranger Tides. She plays a lady in a carriage, and it took me longer to say that than I think she's in the film. It just kind of goes by. It's like, well, she's a big name, right? They get her for the film, and that probably is a fast paycheck. And yeah, I enjoy her watching her on screen this few minutes, but you know what I'm saying? She's not really pushing herself as an actor there. She is kind of coasting or riding in the carriage at that point. And I think there are some of the more recent films. And again, I got to be careful how I say this because she's done some really good work in the last decade. But I think there are times where almost like M in a Bond film, as capable as she is at doing that, it's sort of hitting that same button, which admittedly, when you're in a James Bond film, it is formulaic. You know, you expect that at some point you go back to headquarters and there's M looking stern behind the desk and she's going to dress you down for something. Yeah, that's what it's got to be there. But you know what I'm getting at, Marie, that sometimes you just feel like, okay, I'm enjoying this, but goodness knows she's pressed that button before.
Yeah, I see your point. I think, though, I really appreciate the glimpses of life as an older woman that aren't completely depressing, that, you know, she's still beautiful. She can still find love again. You know, these are stories that women want to see, not just, oh, there's Judi Dench now playing the mother of whoever the real star is, which is how that really seems to go a lot. So, you know, we can mention some roles that she's done that sort of break out of that mold. And one of them is Philomena from 2017, which is I wanted to ask you what you thought about this, Mike. This is a movie about a journalist who picks up the story of a woman's search for her son, who was taken away from her decades earlier when she became pregnant and was forced to live in a convent. Now, of course, this makes me think of the Magdalene Laundrie's movie, because it just kind of touches on that, but it kind of unfolded. It's a Stephen Frears movie, like the movie A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which was about Mr. Rogers. But it's really about, you know, the journalist covering Mr. Rogers and his life and what it was like to, you know, get the story. So I kind of liked that aspect of it because it took it out of what would have been a standard drama where, you know, you have a character thrust into an unthinkably horrible situation. They grow up and then they look back on their life and they want to either make amends or find the child that they had to give away. And of course, all the paperwork and, you know, society is against you doing that and finding out what does happen. But she plays against type here. She plays sort of a frumpy older woman. The flashbacks, of course, show her character as a young, everybody's beautiful when they're young, who has this tragic thing happen to her. And then, you know, her whole life has changed because of it. And then later in life, she tries to go back and find out, you know, what happened to the son. But her performance is extraordinary because she's so Judi Dench. You know, there's always that dignity that she seems to bring to every role. What did you think of that movie, Mike?
I agree with you so absolutely. That's why before, when I was talking about the last 10 to 15 years of her career, there are times where I think she's kind of coasting, whether it's her fault, quote unquote, or producer saying, we need M again, get us M. She has a 5-minute scene behind the desk. You know, that's what I'm sort of getting at, where she can kind of coast that way. Or if you're going to be in a Pirates of the Caribbean, I mean, you know, you're just doing it, right? I mean, you're not looking for great acting. So that I was sort of going that way with my statement, but also I was trying to qualify it in that she still has had some really good roles in more recent years. And Marie, where I'm agreeing so strongly with you is, if you look at everything she's done in recent years, I think Philomena is arguably the strongest of them, because, and the reason is because she is playing against type. She doesn't want to get in that rut of just being M every other year, you know, and she's playing a very uncharacteristic role, almost like as in, you know, earlier in the career where she could occasionally go against type. And, you know, when she was playing, you know, Iris Murdoch, things like that in Iris, she knows that, you know, she doesn't want to get stuck with that kind of like stereotype of you're this, you're that. And I think she's been smart with periodically doing things like Philomena to remind us of what a good actor can do. And that it's not what she'd been doing in so many of the big box office films, if you will.
You know, one thing I want to give it to her in terms of M, I love her portrayal as M, because first of all, it's very believable. She seems very smart enough, you know, aware enough of, you can just see her being, you know, the mastermind of the whole enterprise as M. But what I really like in the more recent James Bond movies with Daniel Craig is that, you know, there actually seems to be a real friendship and animosity together between her and Daniel Craig, which is so believable. And given the difference in age, that's really hard to pull off, but she does, because she still seems like a very vibrant, interesting woman, not just, well, let's just find somebody who can, you know, give it the dignity and call it a day and give her the check. So I really like her as M. I was also really impressed with her in 2018's Red Joan, although I didn't think it was a great movie by any means. But, you know, she plays the story of Joan Stanley, who was exposed as the KGB's longest serving British spy, you know, which is sort of interesting because as M, her job would be to root out Red Joan. So I like, you know, the little bit of irony that went with that. She is going to be in a movie coming out this year called Belfast, which is directed by Kenneth Branagh, about a young boy and his working class family experience in the tumultuous late 1960s. So just with that little description, I think I can't wait to see what Judi Dench is going to do with that role. It just seems like she can really play anything and give it dignity and heart. Which brings us to the end of our episode this week. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.